Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin wins more national and international cheese awards than any other state or country? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
I'm HRN's Communications Director, Kat Johnson, with a preview of the next episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. We're fresh off our trip to Slow Food Nations in Denver, a festival that brought together advocates to discuss the future of food. And this week, we're bringing you a special episode inspired by the new Equity, Inclusion, and Justice Manifesto released by Slow Food USA.
If we're going to solve food security, we need to say these people have a right to good, healthful food, but we have to do that in a way that kind of insulates this system from the vagaries of the market.
Because when you're at a table with somebody, you recognize their humanity. And when somebody cooks for you and serves you food, in a way they're saying they care about your survival.
How can we put things into our own hands and have the people of Puerto Rico gain real access to healthy local foods?
Listen to Meat and Three this week for our highlights from Slow Food Nations, available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And welcome to the food scene on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. And on today's episode, Eric Ramirez grew up in New Jersey with his Peruvian-Japanese grandmother. Now, decades later, his restaurant Llama Inn in Brooklyn is an exploration and in honor to his blended past. There's a long history between the behind the K cuisine, which is a proverbial bridge blending Peruvian ingredients and Japanese techniques, which sees ceviche in a similar vein to sashimi, and tacuchos, or grilled skewers akin to yakitori. Just like the great expanse between the Andes and the Amazons, there's a range of flavors that are found at Llama Inn, worlds apart but bound by Brooklyn. So welcome on air, Eric.
Thank you for having me.
We'll start with actually our origin story, because I met you a couple of years ago at the Culinary Institute in Napa, and you were doing a demo unlike any other, and I think it's in the lore of that school now, that you were in the backyard digging a pit. And what were you doing?
Me and a friend of mine, Jaime Pisaque, who's a chef also in Lima. He has a restaurant called Maita. We did something called Pachamanca, which is essentially just cooking in the earth. So we dug a hole. We asked them to kind of bring us some river stones so we can heat them up. Lined them up in the pit, covered it with some banana leaves, and then just stuffed all our proteins, our vegetables, our potatoes, humitas, which is kind of like a sweet tamal. Covered it in some more banana leaves, some more hot stones, and just buried it in the dirt. And just kind of like created an oven within the earth and let everything cook in it. And then just opened it up, exposed it, all the steam came out, the great smells. And we laid it all out on the table, and we had everybody that was part of that demonstration eat with their hands and dip everything in the sauces. It was a pretty cool experience.
So this is how you grew up eating in New Jersey, I assume.
No, it's not how I grew up eating in New Jersey.
But your grandmother
is... That's very, like, indigenous, very, like, you find that in more of, like, the mountainous regions in the Andes, you know, Cusco, like, that whole area.
But this blend of what your grandmother is, Japanese and Peruvian, mm-hmm. It may seem or sound uncommon, but it is not.
It's not uncommon.
So what or how did that ever become?
So Japanese started migrating to Peru in the late 1800s, like 1899. The first group of Japanese were like 760 Japanese. They came over on a boat called Sakaru Maru. And then during World War II, more Japanese started migrating to Peru. It all started with, I guess the economy in Japan went down and there was Japanese laborers looking for work. And there was news about this country, Peru, being like rich soil, good for farming, moderate climate, kind of, you know, the same as Japan. So a lot of Japanese started migrating to Peru. Well, Pacific was like a huge like trade highway, so...
It's a wild expanse, so, I mean, not to alliterate, but Andes and Amazon, both are within this, you know, nation of Peru, but they are distinctly different regions.
Distinctly different, yeah. So what's interesting about Peru, it's... If you look at the geography of it, you have the coast, then you have the mountain regions, which are the Andes, then you have forest, and then rainforest. And then you go to south of Peru, it's all desert. So you have all these microclimates, a lot of biodiversity, and the result of that is all the ingredients. You know, amazing fish from the coast, grains, potatoes, corn from the Andes, fruit from the Amazon. You know, the south is pisco and wine. You know, a lot of different products. And then on top of that, you have all the cultural influences. Japanese, Chinese, Spanish, African, the indigenous, and all that mixed up together is what Peruvian cuisine is.
Because it's funny, it's chifa, right? The chifa. The Chinese Peruvian. I've had chifa cuisine before. And I didn't know that there were other blends so prominent until I saw this demonstration that you did at the CIA and started digging into it because I'm, aside from being a Japanophile, you know, I just love seeing how multicultural influences become larger than just that crappy word fusion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're ingrained, they're fully assimilated into what they're doing. And this Nikkei cuisine, this Japanese Peruvian or Peruvian Japanese cuisine is something in it of its own that I had never experienced before. You know, I know Peruvian cuisine as maybe like rotisserie chicken or what is it? Lomo saltado,
ceviche.
Yeah.
And that's like the stereotype, I think, that we come across in New York City. You know, people have like this idea of what it is. You know, the rotisserie chicken, the ceviche, and the delicious green sauce that you find with the chicken. But it's obviously a lot more than that, you know.
But it wasn't until Anticuchos, you know, seeing things grilled on sticks and then having yakitori in Japan that I realized that there is that bridge.
Mm-hmm.
What is that bridge? Is it one country's ingredients and one country's techniques, or is it a blend of the two things?
It's a blend of the two things. It's somebody from Japan migrating to Peru and adapting to what's around them, the ingredients, the flavor profiles, at the same time using how they've learned how to cook in Japan, you know, so applying their technique, their ideology of how food should be, but with Peruvian ingredients and flavor. Eventually the flavor came, you know, because it's the evolution of it, how it happened.
So let's take quinoa, for instance, you know, a Peruvian super grain.
Complete protein, has every buildup, like amino acid strand of what makes up a protein.
How does it find its way into a Japanese dish?
Well, see, it's going back to cooking with what's around you, you know? So it's somebody that's Japanese, you know, for instance, I don't know, like, instead of using rice, they use quinoa, you know? It's just adapting to and learning the ingredients that, you know, the country has available and using those in a Japanese way.
Yeah, and that seems not just out of necessity, but like you said, cooking with what's around you, but you cooked around. I mean, you cooked at some legendary places here in New York, 11 Madison Park mm-hmm. being one of them. You cooked for Richard Sandoval at Rami. You cooked for Adam Shoup and Nuela, exploring, you know, Latino cuisine. What were you doing along this path to set yourself up for cooking exactly what you grew up with or what you knew as a child?
Well, when I first started cooking, I never really wanted to do... I never knew I was going to do the food that I grew up eating or had this idea of, you know, I want to be a chef and do Peruvian cuisine. So I kind of went the whole, like, you know, started doing the American and the French and then eventually the fine dining. And I always thought that was something that, at the moment, it was what was popular, right? So I guess that's what I wanted to do at the moment. And then I met Adam Shoup at Nuela, and he was, you know, he was looking for a chef. It was Nuevo Latino with Douglas Rodriguez, and I actually worked with him actually worked for Jose Garces in Alma de Cuba, what at the time was the chef de cuisine or executive chef under Douglas. So that's how I met them. And I really enjoyed Douglas food. I thought it was very flavorful and it was just good. You know, I had a lot of like soul. So I met Adam, and that's kind of like how I got into the whole like Latin fusion, the Nuevo Latino thing. During Nuella, it's funny because I really, like, so I was a chef de cuisine there, and I applied a lot of what I've learned in cooking to those flavors, which they did translate, but it wasn't there just yet. You know, I needed to learn more on how to do it right. So it was like my first step into that and kind of figuring out like how to approach this type of cuisine and learning on how to, like, if it should be cooked this way or if it should be cooked more of like the way it's supposed to be cooked, and, you know, without losing the integrity of what the dish is or what the ingredient is or where it comes from. So then after Nuella, which it wasn't really that great of a 2-year experience, I was kind of like, you know what, I'm done with the whole Nuevo Latino. I didn't want to do it anymore. I kind of just wanted to go back to doing what I was doing before. And then it's funny, the owner of Nuella at the time, Colombian guy, who's the owner of Rhyme now, which is the same restaurant but just different concepts, was like, we're going to turn this into a full Peruvian restaurant. Richard Sandoval was going to kind of be the name of the restaurant. We were going to call it Rhyme and do this whole thing. And I was like, you know, like, it's the food I grew up eating, but I'm not too familiar with it. I don't feel comfortable cooking it. So I was like, nope. And then just after a lot of like, you got to do this, you got to do this. It's in like, he's like, it's in you. Like, you should try it, you know? So I took a trip to Peru, and I guess that's kind of what just kind of grabbed me. And like, I was just amazed by everything that was happening over there.
And that was in 2009, and you got to tour around and work in kitchens of illustrious chefs too.
Yeah,
it wasn't like you were just backpacking and knocking on doors.
Yeah, well, luckily Armin, like the owner of Rhyme, was a really good friend of Virgilio from Central. So I got an opportunity to trail there, and I trailed at Ashringa Stone, and I trailed with my buddy Jaime Pisake from Maita. And I was just pretty much like blown away, because like, I was in a Peruvian restaurant, but they weren't necessarily cooking Peruvian food. It wasn't like the traditional Peruvian food that we're like people in New York City are familiar with. You know, like the what we call comida criolla, like the causa, the tamal. You know, what people that know Peruvian food kind of like, that's what they think of, right? It was using Peruvian ingredients and cooking how we cook here, like with using local and seasonal ingredients, you know, applying modern technique, different cooking methods. And that's what kind of, like, I was like, you know, it is Peruvian food because it's done by a Peruvian chef and with Peruvian ingredients, but it's something that can be translated to here in the United States. Even though we don't have all these ingredients in front of us, but we can try to do the best that we can with what we can get, you know? So that's like kind of when I had that, I was like, you know what, I gotta, let's start this, you know. So Rhyme, I really kind of learned the foundation, the basis of Peruvian cuisine, developed the flavors, and then I had the opportunity with Llama Inn, and I just knew like that was the opportunity to kind of take that and kind of do something that's familiar for New Yorkers, but at the same time introduce something new and different, you know, kind of put Peruvian cuisine in a different stage, so people can, like, I don't know, like, just relate to it more and become like a popular like topic of like, you know, instead of like, hey, well, let's go eat Peruvian food, you know, instead of, oh, burgers, Japanese, Italian, you know, like, there's so many Italian restaurants, you know, so it was just the right, you know.
Well, I also think Llama Inn is much more than just a Peruvian restaurant. You obviously have your Nikkei tasting menus, which is the blend of Peruvian and Japanese, but you call yourself part inn, part urban hacienda, part barrio bar. And what's most important to note is you are at the corner of this really interesting, you know, division of Williamsburg, Brooklyn. And even though you told me right before the show you've only been there for about 2.5, maybe 3 years, there's something about solidifying an institution on a corner that makes it so special. And on that, we're going to take a quick break and be right back. Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the farmstead cheese company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious stinky Limburger and its long storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Satori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth-generation cheesemakers combine old-world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
I'm Souther Teague of Amore Amargo and a co-host of The Speakeasy right here on Heritage Radio Network. You know, my favorite thing to do every week is to come here and be on the show. I have lots of jobs. I'm a very busy person. And I do this because I love it. I get to sit down and talk to all my heroes for about an hour every week. It's incredible. And I hope that you enjoy it, making a great effort to share with you. And we'd like you to share back with us. It's our summer fundraiser, and we'd love for you to donate at heritageradionetwork.org/donate. You can click on the beating heart, and you can even choose shows that you'd like to donate to specifically. And you can also choose a recurring monthly gift. And for all that, we'd be greatly appreciative. Thank you so much.
Hey, and welcome back to the Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here today with Eric Ramirez of Llama Inn. And I want to go back to this number, 760, because we stated this, but 760 Japanese immigrants to Peru, and now there is a cuisine. Now there is you. There is a restaurant, Llama Inn.
Out 1899, of that, that's when it happened, 760.
That's an absurd number. I don't mean absurd big. I mean like such a specific small number to have such a large impact.
Yeah, it was a very small number, actually, yeah.
How many Japanese Peruvians are there living in Peru these days?
It's about 1.9% of Peruvian population.
Yeah.
I think so, yeah.
And how many Peruvians live in Brooklyn? How many Nikkei Japanese Peruvians live in Brooklyn?
I don't know. Not much. Yeah. I don't think much. Because, I don't know.
Because so Llama Inn is Peruvian in essence. And like I stated before, it's part inn, part urban hacienda, part barrio bar. So it services a lot of different aspects of being a restaurant, being a figurehead in the community. What are you trying to do there by introducing this Nikkei cuisine, these tasting menus every Tuesday? I believe you do, what, 8 courses?
Yeah, it's 8 courses. This is our second version of it. And it's a good platform to just explore, you know, explore more of the Peruvian culture. And the best way to do it, I think, is through the food. You know, you can learn a lot about where people came from, their diets, like what they've eaten, you know, what ingredients they brought over, you know, what ingredients they use improve to adjust from an ingredient that they've used in their homeland. It's a very good way of learning about it.
So what is an alfajor?
Alfajor?
Yeah.
Alfajor is a shortbread cookie with dulce de leche, or what we call marja blanco, in it, dusted with powdered sugar. So it's funny because back where I grew up, there's this Japanese Peruvian lady that makes alfajores. And if you go to a Peruvian restaurant, if you go to a traditional criollo Peruvian restaurant, they're delicious. But if you get it from the, they're not completely different. They're actually pretty the same, but you can just tell that this lady uses aniseed, and the cookie's not as crumbly. It's a little more chewy, but it's supposedly the way that a Peruvian Japanese lady would make the alfajor. You know, so it's not the same, but it's different. It's hard because what my grandmother says, you can tell when a Peruvian Japanese lady makes the alfajor, and you can tell when a criollo woman or, you know, makes an alfajor. It's different.
And when you make one, you use cured foie, pineapple, and yuzu.
Yeah, it's a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the yuzu, a citrus of Japan, the foie, I'm assuming you learned in your, you know, fine dining experience.
Yeah, so it's miso cured foie gras. So there was a lot of versions of that when we first started doing it. But yeah, it became the miso cured foie with pineapple yuzu and an alfajor cookie. And then we fold a little bit of marca blanco in the foie gras.
I love this idea.
Or the dulce leche in the foie gras.
Also on the tasting menu, there's this idea of quinoa furikake. And, you know, furikake, you know, is a sprinkling of seeds and seaweed and spices that you usually put over, you know, rice. But are you incorporating the quinoa into the actual furikake blend?
Yeah, so we make furikake. The only thing we don't make is the shichimi togarashi.
Mm-hmm.
But besides that, everything else, we toast, cut, grind, and make this blend of a quinoa furikake, and we put it over a quinoa tofu served with caviar.
And there's also some unrefined Peruvian sugar that you sprinkle on top?
We call it chancaca.
Yeah.
Yeah, so chancaca is basically, it's an unrefined sugar similar to panela, palm sugar, piloncillo, brown sugar. We melt it down with some water. We add a little fish sauce to it, some orange peel. And yeah, and that's it. Traditionally, it's served with what we call picarones, which is a sweet potato and squash pureed fried donut. So when the Spanish came over, they introduced the buñuelos, and the picarones actually happened by mistake by trying to make or mimic or replicate the Spanish buñuelo. And then that's how the picaron came to be.
So do you
and you find them everywhere on the street, and they're absolutely delicious.
Do you feel like a lot of these things were intentional or mistakes? Like, even when you came up with this dish, tuna and seaweed and leche de tigre with cabosu, I mean, it has both parts, but is it accidental that you arrived to this end, or is it a lot of trial and error and experiment?
I would say trial and error. I mean, there are some things that happen by accident, and they're like a good accident. So it's like, this is the dish. But I would say the ceviche more trial and error. Kind of have an idea of what I want to do. And I know, you know, seaweed can be good in leche de tigre, and the pineapple kind of cuts it all. It was, just trial and error.
This potato puree that sits underneath a mackerel and octopus dish. What is so important of this, you know, simple root vegetable in Peru, and how does it translate into the Nikkei experience?
Right, so I think it's like 3,500 different types of varieties of potatoes. Not all edible, but a lot of potatoes. So Peru introduced the potato to the world. And we have this dish called causa, which is a cold potato puree. You put some ají amarillo, which is a Peruvian yellowish orange chili, spicy. We puree it and mix it into that, add some oil to give it a little richness, creaminess to make it nice and fatty, and then lime juice to give it. So it's like a cold potato puree with a little acidity and some heat, and we use it as the vehicle for a nigiri. So instead of the rice, it's the potato with like some cured mackerel, and then we do a nigiri glaze, which is the glaze that's typically used on sushi. For when they make the nigiris, they take the fish, you know, when they kind of make the ball it up, they put the fish over it, and then you kind of see the chef kind of dip the brush into some glaze. So I made the glaze, and we do a yuzu koshu mayo and a rice chip over it. So it's like Peru, it's like a Peruvian sushi, you know, instead of the rice, it's the potato.
Yeah, I mean, yes,
you and can potato go, encompasses like it's Peruvian.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, I mean, yes, you can go to Llama Inn and have all this Nikkei food as well as straight up Peruvian specials. But you are opening or just open a new, more old school Criollo flavor restaurant.
Yamita, yeah, which is or Llamita, Yamita, which translates to Little Llama. It's you know, it's a taste of llama in a more casual, fun, light, you know, setting. You know, grab and go. There's 14 seats. It's in the West Village on Carmine and Varick. Old IHOP. It's in the old IHOP building or restaurant.
Did you keep any relics of the IHOP?
No. But we actually took some relics from Llama Inn into Yamita. So I think we kind of created a little trend here. You know, we're going to bring a piece of each place and kind of put into like our new places, you know.
But it's sanguich and
sanguches.
Sanguches.
No, no. Sanguches.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sanguches. And smoothies. Is this cultural of Peru, yeah, or is it just a Llama Inn thing?
No, no, it's cultural of Peru. I mean, like, you know, the sandwich culture is pretty big, you know, and there's a place called La Lucha. That's the first time I've been not introduced to the sandwich culture, but introduced to the combination of a sandwich and a smoothie. So while Miraflores, there's a place called La Lucha in this Parque Kenny, this area. And I went to go have a sandwich, and I saw there was a list of smoothies. And I was just like, all right, you know, I'll get a smoothie. And it was just delicious. So I was like, this, we got to do it over there. There's another place called La Gran Fruta, which is just strictly smoothies and juices. And their menu is very large, and it's a little overwhelming because there's so many ingredients, and, like, you want to taste everything. But just like some of the flavor combinations that I tasted, like, you know, I never had here in the United States.
Like what?
Or like, for instance, like Grenadilla, which is kind of like a passion fruit, but a little more sweet, not as sour. Chirimoya. We can get chirimoya here frozen, but it's definitely does not taste like what it tastes like over there. You know, camu camu. Just all the fruits that come from the Amazon, you know, just very, like different and delicious.
From like the Andes, the Amazon, so diverse everything that you do, and because of you, I don't think I'll ever look at someone from New Jersey the same again. But knowing knowing that there's this bridge between Japan and Peru and back and forth, and you know that there are these communities, there are these societies built on two cultures that become their own, you know, singular thing.
And it's great because, like, when they both started, they were just so, like, one never outdid the other, right? Like, old school civilization, empire, Japan, you know, strong, like, and same with Peru, you know, kind of just, you know, they kind of went at it together, and they eventually became one, you know. One never faded the other, right? Like, and some civilizations and cultures, you can see that, you know.
That's why it's the blend, it's the balance. Yeah. It's Eric Ramirez of Llama Inn, Llamita, Nikkei Cuisine on Tuesdays. What, 8 seats at the counter?
Yeah,
only?
8 seats at the counter, from 7. We usually finish around 9:30, 7 to 9:30, so it's not that long. It's about 6-7 courses, 8 courses. We do a little cocktail cart in the beginning, which is pretty cool. We have this pretty amazing soy milk punch. So if you ever want to have a milk punch and you're lactose, like, there you go. And it's pretty amazing. It's with persimmons and soy milk. Yeah, I mean, I think that's an amazing cocktail. That's why I brought it up. Yeah, and, you know, it's a good little... It's a good little journey, you know. You get a little bit of New York, you get a little bit of Llama Inn, a little bit of the Nikkei, you know. It's good.
Excellent, man. Well, I will make my reservation very soon, and in the meantime, have smoothies and sandwiches. Thank you for being on The Food Scene. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkell. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Big thank you to Wisconsin Cheese for sponsoring, Music by Cookies, and David Tatasciore Engineering. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.